Hello! Welcome to Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Weldon. Today's story is called The Lambton Dragon, an adaptation of an English folktale written for you by Daniel Hines. Today, we'd like to say a special thank you to Avery and Tegan and their family in Granby, Connecticut, Knox and Zora and their family in Garrison, New York, Rosie and Lewin and their family in South Minneapolis, Maisie and Olive and their family in Chicago, Illinois, Jack and Davy and their family in San Marcos, Texas, and Olivia, Mason, and Harry and their family in Brownsburg, Indiana. Thank you so much, Harry, Mason, Olivia, Davy, Jack, Olive, Maisie, Lewin, Rosie, Zora, Knox, Tegan, and Avery. You are part of what makes it possible for us to continue to produce fun new stories for our listeners. If you would like to support Stories Podcast and get every episode ad-free, head over to patreon.com/stories and join for just $1 a month. If you'd like access to all of our ebooks or to receive a thank you in a future episode, that's also available at patreon.com/stories. We have new Stories Podcast face masks available. Check those out, plus all of our other merch at storiespodcast.com/shop. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast. If you send us a drawing of your favorite scene or character, we'll share it on our feed. Now here's a word from our sponsors.
Hey, grown-ups.
On the Nintendo Switch system, there's so many worlds you can explore.
Like Hyrule, where I can fight enemies and save the kingdom with Link.
That sounds adventurous.
Or my very own island in Animal Crossing New Horizons, where I can fish whenever I want.
Look at the size of that thing! You can find even more worlds to explore on the Nintendo Switch system. Games rated E to E10+. Games and systems sold separately.
Thanks! Enjoy the episode! The Lambton Dragon. Once upon a time in medieval England, in the town of Fatfield, there lived a boy named John. He was bold and confident, especially as a child, and was always getting into trouble. Of course, he was the son of a lord, so he never really got punished, which didn't do much for his behavior. One day, as the other kids were getting ready to go to church and school, John decided that school sounded boring. But fishing sounded just fine. He snuck off and grabbed his gear before anyone could notice he was missing. As he walked to the river, rod on his shoulder and a whistle on his lips, John was stopped by a cackle from a nearby tree. Surprised, he whipped around and saw the oldest woman he had ever laid eyes on. She must have been 100 if she was a day, her face a canyon system of deep lines and folds. Her hair was thin and white, and she wore a long gown of tattered brown, stained here and burned there about the sleeves.
"Ah, fishing boy," she crooned. "Seems to me you'll miss school if you don't head back now."
John had gotten over his surprise, and now he was just upset at being bothered by some old lady. "How about you mind your own business?" he said. "Don't you have a blanket to knit or some socks to darn up?" The woman's face went still. It didn't change, not in any way John could pinpoint, but she became different. She became dangerous.
"Careful, boy," she said. "I'm Fenny, the Witch of the Woods, and I've read your omens. If you skip your responsibilities and go fishing today, you'll doom the town with your mistake."
"Doom, gloom, doom," John said, laughing. "Omens aren't real, and I think you'd better head on home before your great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren start to miss you, you old bat." The witch snarled and seemed to melt back into the trees. John shook his head and kept on walking to the river. There were always witches and prophets and dowsers around, and they all promised they could tell your future or find your fortune. In John's limited experience, the only thing they were good at was guessing the weather, and even then they got it wrong half the time. By the time he settled on the bank of the River Weir to fish, he had put the old woman completely out of mind and was focused on his line. The morning spooled out quietly,
with not so much as a bite from the fish. John was just starting to doze in the sun when his line suddenly snapped tight. "Fish on!" he whooped, hauling on the rod. "Righto!" The fish put up a tremendous fight, pulling and diving and swimming this way and that under the water. John almost lost it a few times, but finally, with a mighty heave of his young back, the fish sailed into the air and landed on the shore with a wet splat. John turned, expecting to see a big pike after the fight it had given him, and was shocked to see a tiny worm, no bigger than John's own pinky finger. "What in the world?" John asked, leaning in for a better look. It was green and scaled like a fish, but heavy for its size, and with a strangely large mouth. Most notable of all, it had two twisting black horns jutting from either side of its head. John had never seen anything like it, and he brought it back into town to ask if anyone knew what it was. Unfortunately, the first person he came across was the preacher, who immediately scolded John for missing church.
"Mr. Lambton," he said,
using his last name even though John hated that.
"You missed church, and now you're missing school. Just because you're the son of a lord doesn't mean you can eschew your responsibilities, young man."
"Sure, sure," John said, not remotely listening. Sir, have you ever seen one of these?" He held up his strange catch, twisting and slithering, its tiny black horns glinting in the sunlight.
"Oh, a demon,"
the preacher said, backing away.
"A monster! Look at that little devil imp!"
"Really?" John said, peering at the curling green worm. "Seems pretty harmless to me. It did put up quite the fight in the river, though."
"John," the preacher said seriously, "promise me you'll get rid of that. Put it somewhere no one will find it. Put it somewhere no one will find it. Do you understand?"
John was a little taken aback. The preacher wasn't usually all that serious, but the worm had really spooked him.
"Of course, sir. I'll take care of it now."
John hurried away before the preacher could say anything else. He knew he couldn't keep the weird worm, and the preacher's reaction had reminded him of the witch's warning. The two of them together had John pretty freaked out, but he didn't want to throw the creature back in the river where someone else could catch it. He didn't want to kill it either, because it hadn't done anything wrong besides freak out some adults. In the end, he decided to throw the strange wormfish into the abandoned well near the hill. It had started pulling sour water a year or two back, and now everyone stayed clear of it. There was still plenty of water deep in the ground, though, and maybe the worm could find a home down there.
"Good luck, little bug," John said, grabbing the worm by the horns and dropping it into the old well.
It sailed silently into the dark, and then John heard a distant bloop as it splashed into the water.
"Well, that takes care of that," John said, dusting off his hands. "Now, I wonder what we can rustle up for lunch."
He walked away, the worm already forgotten. Years passed, and there were a series of terrible wars known as the Crusades. John grew up in a kingdom torn by battle, and the same boldness and confidence that had made him a troublesome kid made him a fantastic leader. By the iron of his armor and the steel of his sword, the boy became a young man, and then the young man became a knight. He learned of chivalry, which was the code that taught knights that boldness and confidence were nothing unless they were paired with kindness and respect. The Crusades spelled the end of many fine people, but John, now Sir Lambton, came home a hero. But the home he came back to, he didn't recognize at all. As he approached Fatfield, he found people streaming away from the town. They had all of their worldly goods on horses and wagons, and some poor souls had everything on their backs.
"What's going on here?" John asked.
He was wearing his armor and riding his war horse still, so he cut an impressive figure.
"The dragon's what's going on," said a woman.
She looked up and down at John's armor, and her eyes lingered on his well-worn sword.
"Have you come to slay it?"
"A dragon?" John asked. "You can't be serious."
"Where have you been, living under a rock?" asked a bitter-looking man.
"Look at the man, you twit," said the first woman. "He's been in the Crusades, haven't you?"
"I have. My name is Sir John Lambton, and I'm afraid I've been across the world for the last 10 years. Would you kindly fill me in?"
"Sir John? I remember seeing you run about as a wee child, always causing trouble around town you were."
"Seems like there's trouble enough without me here," he said. "Please, is my father okay? Tell me what happened." Eventually, John got the story out of the crowd of fleeing people. It seemed that some years ago, without warning, a great dragon had burst from the abandoned well on the hill. It devoured everything it could find and would have eaten all the people, too. But Lord Lambton, John's father, had acted fast. He'd ordered 100 cows to be milked each morning and the milk brought to the dragon as an offering. That had worked for the past years, but now the dragon was getting bigger, hungrier, and there was no choice but to run.
"Has anyone tried to slay the beast?" John asked.
"Loads of someones," said the bitter man. "First us townfolk tried our best, but this dragon is so big and so fast we didn't have a chance.
The thing wraps around that hill 7 times. It must be 1/2 mile long, and it coils like a snake, crushing first and then biting."
"Surely they must have called for a knight," John asked.
"Surely they did," the woman said. "Most like you were off fighting the Crusades in Barbary. But we had a few knights come questing for glory. One cut the dragon in 1/2, and we thought he'd done it. But the pieces just wiggled themselves back together."
"They wiggled themselves back together?" John asked, eyes wide. He had heard of dragons, but this beast seemed bigger and fiercer, with a strange healing magic.
"More than that," said the man.
"Any piece you cut off of it just wriggles on back into place. I swear, beast is unslayable.
That's why we're all moving out. Wars or no, anything's got to be safer than having that dragon for a neighbor, right?"
Emotion swelled inside of John. He was sad about his home, angry at the dragon, and worried he was too late. He felt as if he was about to pop, but then the woman said one final comment as she walked away. One final comment that pushed John over the edge.
"We don't even know where it came from. Just sprung up out of the old well, you know, near the hill one day. Just out of nowhere."
John froze. All of a sudden, the years melted away in his memory, and he was holding the strange wormfish with its scales and strange twisting.
"Tell me," John said, calling after the woman. "Please, does the beast have horns?"
"Oh, yeah," said the woman. "Great strange horns, all shiny black and twisty."
And then John realized. The dragon was that little worm he had caught 10 years ago. That strange old woman had been right after all. He had doomed the town. He'd doomed them all. The thought settled like a sickness in his belly. It made him feel like throwing up, but queerly empty at the same time. It was his fault. His little demon worm was all grown up. "Well," thought John, gripping his sword for comfort, "I'm all grown up too, and if anyone can fix this mess, it's going to be me." He sat on his horse for a moment, thinking. The sun baked his shiny armor, and sweat ran freely into the padded clothes he wore underneath. He wanted to go and slay the dragon at once, but so many had failed. He needed to be smart. How could he learn more about the dragon? There were books, but he needed something more. Something magical, something witchy. He spurred his horse towards the River Weir and hoped that the old witch, Fenny she had called herself, was still alive. It had been roughly 10 years and she had seemed ancient when he was a child. Could she possibly have lived so long? Even if she had, Was there a chance she had survived the dragon attacks and the chaos? There was only one way to find out. John spurred his warhorse and thundered across the land that had once been his home. He saw buildings abandoned, farms laying fallow, and even the trees seemed to shrink and curl in on themselves like dead bugs. The whole place felt wrong, and all John could hear was his own voice in his head, repeating the same phrase over and over and over. "This is all your fault." He pushed the thought aside. There would be time later to feel bad. Now was the time to make things right. When he got close to where he remembered the old woman living, he found some more refugees running from the dragon. These ones were lassoing their cows and trying to drive them along. "Friends, does the witch Fenny still live in these parts?" An old man snorted, coiling his rope.
"Fenny will be living in these parts long after the rest of us are gone and buried."
"Where is she?"
"At a cottage, about a league north, past the stand of fir trees." The man shook his head sadly.
"We tried to bring her along, what with the dragon and all, but she wasn't budging. Said she was waiting on someone."
A thought occurred to the old man, and he peered up at John with new interest.
"Are you the one she's waiting for?"
"You know," said John, no longer doubting old Fenny's magic, "I think I just might be."
"Best hurry right along then,"
said the old man, lassoing another cow as it tried to wander away.
"Fenny's got quite a temper if you keep her waiting."
John nodded thanks and rode north through the woods, past the fir trees, and came upon a squat little cottage, so overgrown it seemed to be a natural part of the forest. Sitting in front, peeling a lumpy vegetable on a low stump, was old Fenny.
"So, you finally showed up," she said, without looking away from her peeling. "It's about time you dealt with that mess you left behind."
John sank to one knee in front of the witch, bowing his head. All the guilt about the dragon washed over him, and he felt tears stinging at his eyes.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I should have listened to you. This is all my fault."
There was a long moment of silence, and then Fenny gently touched his chin with her peeler and lifted his face to hers.
"Ah, don't be so hard on yourself," she said finally. "We all make mistakes when we're kids. I once turned my brother into a brush when he made fun of me hairstyle. You couldn't have known that little worm would turn into a fierce dragon. It's in the nature of young people not to listen to old people."
"Still, it's my fault," John said, but his heart felt lighter.
"Maybe so," said Fenny. "And what are you going to do about it then?"
"I want to slay the dragon," he said, "but everyone says the dragon can't be slayed. They say it crushes like a snake, and if you cut off a piece, it just wiggles back into place again. I just want to make things right."
"No one knows how to slay the dragon," Fenny said, and John felt his heart break again. "No one except old Fenny the witch."
John looked up, and Fenny smiled.
"Now listen closely, boy. First thing you need to do is get some more swords, and then spears, and then a blacksmith, and then..."
Fenny kept talking, and together they planned long into the night. 2 days later, John was ready for the fight. He walked into the ghost town of Fatfield, leaving his horse behind so it wouldn't be eaten. On the witch Fenny's instruction, John had modified his armor to fight the dragon. A blacksmith had attached sword blades and spearheads all over the armor until it looked like a porcupine made of weapons. His every step clanked and rattled and scraped. John felt ridiculous, but he had come too far to turn back now. One steely step at a time, John came to the heart of the town and found the Dragon's Hill. It seemed taller than John remembered, all bright green and shining in the sun, but there was no sign of the dragon itself. Had it left, looking for food? Was it even now attacking some helpless village?
"Dragon!"
John called, slamming his sword into the spikes of his armor, making them ring like a bell.
"Dragon, come and fight!"
For a moment, nothing happened. The town seemed dead and abandoned, the dragon's ashy shadow cast all over. And then, John gasped. The hill itself started to move. No, not a hill. A dragon. With a mighty roar that shook John's teeth, the beast uncurled itself from the hill and stretched into the air. It was hundreds of feet long, its mouth a well of fishhook teeth, its long black horns curling into points. It had wrapped itself around the hill 7 times, and now it unfurled and charged straight at John, mouth opening wider and wider until John thought it would turn itself inside out. Time to go. He turned and ran as fast as he could, which wasn't especially fast in his modified armor. It scraped and screamed as sword blades ground together, but he didn't stop until he could see the River Weir ahead. He was almost there. Just a few more seconds. The dragon smashed into him from behind. John went rolling head over bottom and ended up stuck in the sandy riverbank. Before he could so much as raise his sword, the dragon started to wrap around him, crushing him like a snake would, just like it had killed so many others, just like John planned. With a final jerk, the dragon pulled itself tight, thinking to crush John in its coils. Instead, it roared in pain as the blades and spearheads all over John's armor bit into the dragon in 100 places. The bits of dragon that got cut free immediately started wiggling back and reattaching themselves, but the dragon was forced to pull back for a moment. John took advantage immediately. He turned and splashed into the river, going as deep as he dared while covered in metal. Inside his helmet, he wore a savage grin. This wasn't running away. This was the other half of the witch's plan. The dragon, seeing that its coils wouldn't work, snapped at John directly, lunging with its mouth and tail. Every time it got close, John countered with his sword. Steel rang off scales and teeth and black curling horns. John had spent the last 7 years fighting pirates in the Crusades, and he was quick as a hare and deadly as a wolf. He roared, and his sword slung shining arcs of river water as he sliced every scale and blocked every attack the dragon could muster. The beast roared back, but it was weaker now, rattling like a dry cough. John turned and smiled wider. The witch's plan was working. As he cut each small piece off of the dragon, they were taken away by the swift current of the river. The scaled pieces were pulled away downstream and drowned before they could reattach themselves. In time, the dragon was moving slower, missing chunks like a half-finished puzzle. It seemed to have no blood, just scales over a thick, waxy body like a candle. "Come on, you dragon, you worm!" John bellowed, up to his chest in the rushing water of the river, sword dripping in his raised fist. The dragon charged, and John swung his blade in whirling blurs that cut the air and sent pieces flying. John was snarling, pressing ahead towards the dragon's gaping mouth, when the tail, holding a tree like a club, smashed him behind the knees. John went down in an instant, water flooding into his armor, into his helmet, into his mouth. The weight of all that iron, all those sword and axe blades welded on, seemed to push him into the mud like some giant fist. He tried to shout, but that just let more water in. He started choking. All around him in the water, he could see the dragon's endless coils, pieces missing, rippling like an alien current. For a moment, John was tempted to just lie there. The world was so heavy, so dark and swirling. He had a vision of himself, pulling the worm from the water, tossing it into the well. He saw the worm, now a dragon, burst free and lay waste to John's hometown. John knew he had started it. And, with a sudden surge of determination, he knew that he'd be the one to finish it. Struggling against the weight, against the current, against the dragon, John fought to his feet. With a final heave, his helmeted head burst above the surface of the water, and he drew in a great, sucking, gasping breath. The dragon was on him a second later, but if it thought that John had weakened from the water, it was sadly mistaken. John found his sword somehow still clutched in his hand, and he drew it back in a mighty two-handed grip. The dragon charged, horns lowered like a bull, meaning to crush John into paste, armor or no. The beast surged forward, hurried along by the river's current. John bellowed and swung to the side, chopping down with his sword at the same moment. The dragon's horns missed. John's sword did not. The monster's head parted from its coiling body. It burned up like paper in a flame and disappeared from the earth forever. John fell back as the rest of the dragon started to dissolve immediately. It turned into sort of a green pond scum that was washed away by the river. Wearily, John felt himself being washed away too. He had beaten the dragon, but it had taken the last of his strength. There was no way he could force his way to shore in his armor. He was done. But at least he had done what he could to fix his past mistakes. He felt himself start to sink, a satisfied smile on his face, and then a snag and a tug. There was a rope. It was wrapped around his raised arm. Someone had lassoed him. John felt a heave, and then he was on the shore, friendly hands unclasping his helmet and letting him breathe the cool, fresh air.
"You did it, boy," said an old man, vaguely familiar. "We saw you slay the dragon."
"We're saved," said a woman.
"It's a right miracle,"
said another man, no longer quite so bitter. John blinked up and saw all the refugees from earlier, plus dozens more. Some of the older ones he recognized from when he was a boy.
It was my fault," John said.
"Maybe so," said the old man. "But when you learn what happened, you took responsibility, and you fixed it, and that's what matters."
John nodded, feeling himself slipping off to sleep, exhaustion finally taking over. The others helped him out of his armor and brought him home to rest. And as his eyes closed for a long and cozy sleep, he saw the witch, Fenny, smiling at him from some distant, dreamy place. And as he finally drifted off, John smiled back. And that's the story of John and the Lambton Worm, the last dragon ever seen in the Kingdom of England. The End. Today's story, The Lambton Dragon, was an adaptation of an English folktale written for you by Daniel Hines and performed for you by me, Amanda Weldon. If you would like to support Stories Podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, get ad-free episodes and more at patreon.com/stories, check out all of our merch available at storiespodcast.com/shop, follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast, or simply tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening!
Hey, Prime members! You can listen to Stories Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today! Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus Kids in Apple Podcasts. Grown-ups, before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.